Hey there, OrthoBullets podcast listeners. Today's episode of the OrthoBullets podcast is sponsored by Bullet Cards, which are now live on orthobullets.com and coming soon to the Bullets app. What are Bullet Cards, you ask? Well, they are basically modern flashcards backed by a powerful spaced repetition algorithm so you can learn more efficiently with the tried and true method, now modernized with AI. You can use our peer-reviewed pre-made flashcards to review critical information or make your own personal flashcards efficiently by creating a question and populating the back of the card with information from our trusted OrthoBullets review topics. Bullet cards are absolutely free, so there's literally nothing to lose and everything to gain. Click the links in our show notes to test out some high-yield bullet card decks and to learn more about how to get started with them. Without further ado, let's get into today's episode of the OrthoBullets podcast. This episode of the OrthoBullets podcast will go over the topic of infectious disease in athletes from the Knee and Sports section on orthobullets.com. In this episode, we'll go over methicillin-resistant Staph aureus or MRSA, herpes gladiatorium, tinea infections, acne mechanica slash folliculitis, impetigo, mononucleosis, as well as HIV and AIDS. So starting with methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus or MRSA, know that MRSA is a bacterium which causes infection in humans. In terms of epidemiology, community-acquired MRSA is increasing in sports. With respect to pathophysiology, transmission is via direct contact with skin, exposed skin from abrasions, for example turf burns, which significantly increases the risk of infection. Sharing of razors, towels, soaps, and personal hygiene products also increases risk. Chances of prevention are increased by avoiding exposure of compromised skin and practicing good hygiene. In terms of the presentation of MRSA, this can manifest on the skin as a boil or pimple type lesion, and it can produce a quote spider bite type lesion. It has been described as pustules on an erythematous base. Treatment of MRSA can be non-operative or operative. Non-operative management includes mupirocin, which is indicated as the initial treatment of small lesions. Operative options include irrigation and debridement with oral trimethoprim sulfamethoxazole and rifampin, which is indicated for larger lesions. Irrigation and debridement and IV antibiotics are indicated for more severe infections. Moving on to herpes gladiatorium, know that herpes infections are a group of viral infections which manifest on the skin and or in the nervous system. With respect to epidemiology, herpes gladiatorium is common in wrestlers and rugby players and occurs in approximately 2% to 7% of wrestlers. With respect to pathophysiology, herpes gladiatorium is caused by herpes simplex type 1 virus and is transmitted via direct skin-to-skin contact. The incubation is 2 to 14 days. Know that the head, neck, and shoulders are the primary areas of infection, and if it contacts the eye, herpetic conjunctivitis can develop. As far as the presentation of herpes gladiatorium, physical exam may reveal clusters of fluid-filled blisters and a rash. Treatment of herpes gladiatorium is non-operative with acyclovir, valacyclovir, and no wrestling until the lesions have scabbed over. Indications include any active lesions, and in terms of return to play, athletes can return to play when there are no new lesions within the preceding 72 hours and at least 5 days of antiviral medications. Moving on to tinea infections, this is a common fungal infection of the skin and can include tinea pedis, corporis, capitis, and cruris, which describes the areas of the body affected. In terms of the epidemiology, tinea infections are common in wrestlers. With respect to the pathophysiology, tinea infections are caused by dermatophytes and are transmitted by direct contact of the fungus with the skin. Know that broken areas of skin can facilitate infection. In terms of presentation, physical exam may reveal scaly red patches in a circular formation. An example includes tinea corporis, or tinea that affects the body, which is also known as ringworm. Moving on to studies to obtain in the setting of tinea infections, the diagnosis is made from scrapings from lesions that are examined under a microscope after preparation with potassium hydroxide. Studies will be positive for tinea if hyphae are found. Treatment is non-operative with topical antifungals, which are indicated for tinea cruris, pedis, and corporis. Systemic antifungals are indicated for tinea capitis and more severe cases of all forms of tinea, and treatment should also include no sports participation, and this is indicated for any active infection. Patients can return to play when they have 48 hours of treatment, however they must be screened prior to competition. Moving on to acne mechanica slash folliculitis, know that this is a skin condition that causes pimple-like lesions. With respect to epidemiology, this occurs in athletes who are required to wear protective padding, like in hockey and football. With respect to the pathophysiology, this is primarily caused by mechanical friction and heat on exposed skin, and occlusion of skin is also a cause. Physical exam may reveal red papules on the skin, as well as inflammation of follicles. Treatment is non-operative, and observation is indicated as the first line of treatment, as most cases will resolve spontaneously after the season ends. Other non-operative modalities include keratinolytics such as tretinoin, which is indicated for severe cases. Prevention includes washing immediately after play, as well as athletic clothing that wicks away moisture. Moving on to impetigo, this is a highly contagious bacterial infection of the skin. With respect to the epidemiology, this is common in wrestlers. As far as the pathophysiology, common pathogens include Streptococcus pyogenes and Staphylococcus aureus. With respect to the presentation, this initially presents as fluid-filled blister-like lesions. Crusting is noted after a few days. Treatment will be with erythromycin and topical Bactroban, which is the first line of treatment. No sports participation is indicated for an active infection. And know that patients may return to play when all lesions are clear of crusting. Moving on to mononucleosis, this is a viral infectious condition characterized by fatigue and splenomegaly. The pathophysiology is caused by an Epstein-Barr virus, which is a herpes virus. The incubation period is 30 to 50 days, and is spread through saliva, like kissing and sharing cups. As far as the presentation of mononucleosis, symptoms resolve in 4 to 8 weeks. The 3 to 5 day prodromal period includes malaise, myalgia, nausea, and headache. Hoagland's triad is fever, pharyngitis in 30% of cases, and lymphadenopathy. With respect to pharyngitis, know that group A streptococcus is responsible, and exudative pharyngitis, that is a white/gray pseudomembrane, is seen in 50% of patients. Lymphadenopathy will present in the posterior cervical chain and will last 2 to 3 weeks. Rash can be common if mononucleosis is treated with ampicillin/amoxicillin and will be petechial/maculopapular/urticarial. Physical exam in mononucleosis patients will reveal splenomegaly and/or pharyngitis. Studies to obtain in the workup of mononucleosis include a heterophile antibody test, otherwise known as the MonoSpot test, that has an 87% sensitivity and 91% specificity. Viral capsid antigen IgG and IgM is 97% sensitive and 94% specific. Finally, lab tests will reveal absolute and relative lymphocytosis with greater than 10% atypical lymphocytes. Moving on to imaging for mononucleosis, this is generally unnecessary. However, if imaging is obtained, order an ultrasound. This is non-invasive, reliable, and has no radiation. A CT scan can be obtained to exclude rupture. Treatment of mononucleosis is typically non-operative. Management includes fluids, hydration, acetaminophen, and rest, no contact sports for 3 to 5 weeks, IM penicillin one time or PO penicillin for 10 days, corticosteroids, advanced airway management, and or a stool softener. So in terms of fluids, hydration, acetaminophen, and rest, know that isolation is unnecessary as transmissibility is low. In terms of no contact sports for 3 to 5 weeks, some take up to 3 months. This is indicated in athletes until splenomegaly is completely resolved, and know that most splenic rupture occurs in the first 3 weeks. Typically, IM penicillin is given one time, or PO penicillin can be given for 10 days. However, erythromycin can be given if the patient is allergic to penicillin. This is indicated for strep pharyngitis, and be sure that you do not use amoxicillin to treat these patients. In terms of corticosteroids, these are used to decrease tonsillar size if there is difficulty swallowing/dehydration. Advanced airway management is conducted if there is respiratory distress. Finally, a stool softener may be used to decrease straining/valsalva during bowel movements. Finally, in terms of complications, the ones to know include a splenic rupture, which has a risk of 0.1 to 0.5%, and again is most common in the first 3 weeks, and is due to sudden increase in portal venous pressure. Know that 50% are atraumatic from Valsalva maneuver, such as rowing or weightlifting, and 50% can come from external trauma. Other complications include aplastic anemia, Guillain-Barré syndrome, meningitis/encephalitis, neuritis, lymphoma, hemolytic uremic syndrome, and disseminated intravascular coagulation. Finally, let's end this review session talking about HIV and AIDS. So know that AIDS is an immune deficiency condition caused by infection with the human immunodeficiency virus, or HIV. With respect to epidemiology, know that HIV can occur in any population. However, there's an increased prevalence in hemophiliacs, IV drug abusers, and men who have sex with men. The pathophysiology involves the CD4 cells, or T helper cells, that are affected. In terms of diagnosis, the diagnosis of AIDS requires an HIV-positive test plus one of the following: a CD4 count of less than 200, and a diagnosis of an opportunistic infection. In terms of treatment, there is no difference in treatment as compared to other athletes. There should be use of universal precautions at all times. As far as wound care, in the event of bleeding, compressive dressings should be used, and participation in sports is restricted until all bleeding has ceased. As far as participation in sports in general, know that HIV infection alone is insufficient grounds to prohibit an athlete from competition. Okay, so now that we've gone over the major points about this topic, let's go over a few questions to apply the information and get a sense of how this topic has been tested on past exams. First question. A 19-year-old football player is taken off the field because of fatigue. Examination shows a petechial rash. Physical exam shows unilateral exudative pharyngitis, where the left tonsil is covered by a white exudate / pseudomembrane. Posterior cervical glands are palpable. A mouse is palpable in the left upper quadrant. Which of the following is true regarding the most likely diagnosis? And the choices are 1. There is a risk of splenic abscess. 2. Bloodborne transmission results in more severe symptoms. 3. He can return to play 3 weeks after he is asymptomatic. 4. Amoxicillin will allow faster return to play. And 5. He should be isolated for 48 hours after symptom onset. The correct answer to this question is 3. He can return to play 3 weeks after he is asymptomatic. So this patient has infectious mononucleosis. Return to play should occur 3 weeks after symptom resolution. To quickly review, infectious mononucleosis is caused by the Epstein-Barr virus. Annual incidence is 1 to 3% in college freshmen. It is characterized by Hoagland's triad, that is fever, pharyngitis, and lymphadenopathy. Some have rash and splenomegaly. Splenic rupture is rare, that is 0.1 to 0.2% of patients. It is caused by sudden increase in portal venous pressure from a simple Valsalva maneuver or from external trauma. The risk of rupture is highest in the first 3 weeks of illness. Petukian et al. Reviewed infectious mononucleosis and athletic participation. They recommend return to light activity after 3 weeks from symptom onset when the athlete is afebrile, has a good energy level, and does not have any significant associated abnormalities. They recommend returning to contact sports after at least 3 weeks when the athlete has no remaining clinical symptoms, is afebrile, and has a normal energy level. Jaworski et al. Discussed infectious diseases in athletes. They state that splenic rupture occurs because of lymphocytic infiltration that distorts the support structure of the spleen, leading to fragility. They recommend return to light, non-contact activities once the athlete is afebrile and appropriately hydrated, fatigue has improved, and a minimum period of 3 weeks has passed from symptom onset. To quickly go over the incorrect answers, answer 1, there is a risk of splenic abscess is incorrect, as there is a risk of splenic rupture with trauma because of splenomegaly, not splenic abscess. Answer 2, bloodborne transmission results in more severe symptoms is incorrect, as Epstein-Barr virus is carried in the saliva and transmission is by kissing, sharing utensils, and sneezing/coughing. Answer 4, amoxicillin will allow faster return to play is incorrect, as amoxicillin/ampicillin is contraindicated because of the risk of rash. Finally, answer 5, he should be isolated for 48 hours after symptom onset is incorrect, as isolation is unnecessary as transmissibility of Epstein-Barr virus is low. Moving on to the next question. A 20-year-old collegiate football player was diagnosed with infectious mononucleosis 2 weeks ago. He has been asymptomatic for the past week. How should you counsel the patient in regards to return to play decisions? And the choices are 1, may return to play now if he receives a 4-week course of oral valacyclovir. 2, may return to play now if there is no sign of splenomegaly. 3, may return to play in 2 weeks if he receives a 4-week course of oral valacyclovir. 4, may return to play in 2 weeks if there is no sign of splenomegaly. And 5, may return to play now if there is no sign of splenomegaly and he receives a 4-week course of oral valacyclovir. The correct answer to this question is 4, may return to play in 2 weeks if there is no sign of splenomegaly. So this patient has infectious mononucleosis. Due to the risk of splenic rupture, return to play should occur 3 weeks after symptom resolution with no evidence of splenomegaly. Infectious mononucleosis is caused by the Epstein-Barr virus and has a reported annual incidence of 1 to 3% in college students. Often, patients will present with fever, pharyngitis, and lymphadenopathy, otherwise known as Hoagland's triad. However, a rash and splenomegaly may also be evident. Splenic rupture is a rare but serious complication of infectious mononucleosis. Rupture occurs following a sudden increase in portal venous pressure and is most prevalent within the first 3 weeks of illness. Patients may return to play approximately 3 weeks after the resolution of symptoms with no evidence of splenomegaly. Ultrasound has been used to demonstrate that the spleen has returned to normal size. Splenic rupture has been reported in non-athletes as well as in patients with normal-sized spleens. Auerter et al. Reviewed the manifestations of infectious mononucleosis in adolescents and young adults. They report that common symptoms include pharyngitis, lymph node enlargement, and transient fatigue. They found that the rare complication of splenic rupture serves a pivotal role in the decision for returning athletes to strenuous physical activities. They recommend a return to all sports in those with spleen enlargement 4 weeks after the onset of illness. Kindernecht et al. Review infectious mononucleosis. They report that while splenomegaly is common, splenic rupture is very rare. They found that an athlete's ability to return to activity usually relates to the presence of splenomegaly and the duration of the illness. They concluded that a splenic rupture has not been reported after an individual has been ill for more than 3 weeks. To quickly go over the incorrect answers, answer 1 may return to play now if he receives a 4-week course of oral valacyclovir. Answer 2 may return to play now if there's no sign of splenomegaly. And answer 5 may return to play now if there's no sign of splenomegaly and receives a 4-week course of oral valacyclovir are all incorrect, as return to play now would have too great a risk of splenic rupture. This patient should not return to play for at least another 2 more weeks. Finally, answer 3 may return to play in 2 weeks if he receives a 4-week course of oral valacyclovir is incorrect, as a course of oral valacyclovir is not needed for the resolution of infectious mononucleosis. And moving on to the final question, if a team experiences an outbreak of community-acquired methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus or MRSA, which of the following factors is most likely to be the etiology? And the choices are 1, presence of turf burns, 2, use of a cold whirlpool, 3, use of a warm whirlpool, 4, sharing locker room soap, and 5, sharing locker room towels. The correct answer to this question is 1, presence of turf burns. So the most commonly reported risk factor for the development of community-acquired methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus is injury to the skin. The majority of infections occur in areas of the body most susceptible to skin trauma, and reports suggest that players involved in frequent repetitive contact, such as linemen and linebackers in football and forward players in rugby, are most susceptible to infection. Areas of skin injury are believed to facilitate entry of the pathogen. One example is in the Kazakova study of a community-acquired methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus outbreak in the St. Louis Rams football team. Being a lineman or a linebacker was associated with the highest relative risk of MRSA infection, and all MRSA skin abscesses developed at the sites of turf burns on areas not covered by a uniform. They sampled surfaces and shared items in the training facility, including weight training equipment, towels, saunas, and steam rooms, as well as water from whirlpools and therapy pools, as well as nasal swabs of trainers who did not have access to regular hand hygiene or alcohol-based hand hygiene products. However, they were unable to identify any of the above as contributing significantly to an increased risk of infection with community-acquired MRSA, as isolates grew only MSSA rather than MRSA. That's all for this review about infectious diseases in athletes. Hopefully that was helpful. This is the OrthoBullets podcast, a daily audio review session by OrthoBullets, the free learning and collaboration community for orthopedic surgery education. Keep in mind that these podcasts are designed to go along with the topics on orthobullets.com, and in fact, you can listen to these episodes right on the OrthoBullets website or mobile app while going through the topic. If you've gotten any value from the OrthoBullets podcast so far, please consider leaving us a 5-star rating and writing us a review on Apple Podcasts. It will help us spread the word and increase our discoverability tremendously. Also, if you aren't already, be sure to follow OrthoBullets on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube for daily high-yield content. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you all tomorrow right here on the OrthoBullets podcast.